A standoff in Fargo ends peacefully, but not without questions, especially from the residents of the home that was broken into. The final proposal has been pitched for a convention center in Fargo. All nine locations have now been dissected by the Fargo Convention Center Committee. And the mother of one of the shooting victims at a Minneapolis school says she will not stop until there is a ban on semi-automatic rifles. Good afternoon, my friend. Steve Hallstrom here with you for the Steve Hallstrom Show on this Friday afternoon that sure feels like a football Friday. No question about that. Good to be here in the chair with you after being in Grand Rapids last night. Had a chilly run after the show last night. It was 44 and raining when I got out of my car up at the Itasca County Fairgrounds and started my 10-mile slog through the rain, and I'm not sure that I can feel my hands yet, but we did what we had to do, and I'm telling you what, that foot-long sub never tasted so good. I said, yeah, heat that meat and the cheese up and nuke it good because I'm cold. So back in the comfortable studios here in Fargo today, and excited that it is another football weekend here for us, and the Bison and the Cobbers and the Dragons, everybody is in action this weekend. Concordia starts its schedule tomorrow night, actually, over there. And if you are a Concordia football fan or you just love some good football talk, we got a special program for you tomorrow, 6 o'clock, stadium show, season preview for the Cobbers, and then they'll kick it off at 7 o'clock with Larry Knutson. And they'll be taking on Mayville State, which had an impressive performance in its season opener. So should be a fun game over at Jay Christensen Stadium tomorrow night. I'll be on the air at 6 on WDAY, doing what I used to do every Saturday, talking college football. Our phone number is 701-271-1100. That's the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. They can get you in quickly because they have recently expanded over there. Physical therapy, occupational therapy, mental health counseling, nurse practitioner. They can do it all for you. ValleyChristian.co. Our phone number, 271-1100, is a nice compliment to the email address, studio@flagfamily.com, and the text line, 701-237-1590. So we'd invite you to be part of the program today. Comments, questions, complaints, we'll take them all. It's all good. And no matter what side of the issues that you are on, I love hearing from you because it helps me understand what people are thinking about, talking about, and the positions that they hold out there in our community as we talk about these issues. Every once in a while, I find myself surprised by the kinds of emails or text messages that we might get or phone calls, and I'll say, huh, I didn't see that coming. So would love to hear from you, especially if you have a position or a belief on a story that you might think runs counter to what you might hear from me or maybe most people in the community. And you want to say, you know what, I get where you're coming from, but I see it differently. I love those good point and counterpoint conversations. So if you want to have one of those, open phone lines today. We are guest free today on this Friday. Well, I guess I can't say that. We just added a guest to the lineup for today. And this should be a good conversation, actually. Fargo Mayor Dr. Tim Mahoney will be with us. And he is obviously one of the lead people involved in the Fargo Convention Center conversations. And they heard their last pitch today. There were three new projects that were proposed today, and now all nine have been pitched. And we'll get his first thoughts on what they heard. And certainly no decisions have been made yet. We understand that. But be good to hear from Mayor Mahoney about the process. So we'll do that coming up here in a few minutes. All right, let's get to the 4 o'clock wrap because we have the mayor coming on here in just a few minutes. So we got a lot of ground to cover between now and then. So let's hop to it. The almanac for today, September 5th, 2025, 76, our average high. That's down a degree from yesterday. 52 is the average low, record high 99 back in 1947. And on this day in 1885, got down to 26 degrees. Sunrise this morning was 6:52. Sunset tonight will be at 7:58. The first time since very early this year that we'll have the sunset before 8 o'clock. Losing all my post-show golf days, there's no doubt about that. Tough to get many holes of golf in after the show. Markets were down today. And there's a lot of theories, but nothing that's really sticking to the wall from what I can tell from economists and people who follow Wall Street today. Dow was down 220, S&P 500 down 21, NASDAQ down 7, so not big losses there today. WTI crude oil down another $1.50 at $61.97. Higher supply apparently expected from parts of the Permian Basin down in Texas had traders thinking, well, maybe this stuff isn't as worth as much as we thought it was when the day started. Gold up $33 an ounce, silver up 9 cents an ounce, and Bitcoin today up $1,300. And current price, $111.255. AAA says average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas unchanged from yesterday at $3.20. North Dakota, $2.93 average price. South Dakota, $3.04. Minnesota, $3.14. Probably the biggest spread that I remember seeing, and I do this every day, so I kind of take a look. And most times it's within 10 or 15 cents, but North Dakota, $2.93, Minnesota, $3.14. I told you yesterday I saw gas at $2.59 when I left my house yesterday morning heading over to Grand Rapids. And by the time I got to, I forget where I was, Glendon or Lake Park, somewhere, it was like $3.29. So it doesn't take long getting into Minnesota before you see those gas prices rise. Diesel fuel today at $3.71. Speaking of weather, this actually leads my list of stories I've got in the 4 o'clock stack for you. National Weather Service has issued a freeze watch for tonight into tomorrow morning for much of western and central North Dakota. We're going to get some clearing skies, and they're saying we could get down to the low 20s out west. It's a little early for such cold. And like I just told you a few minutes ago, our record lows are upper 20s. So, ugh. A standoff is over at a house on 2nd Street North near downtown Fargo. A suspect was taken out of the house around 2:50 this afternoon, reports Valley News Live. Police have been there since the initial call at 10:26. A man who was known to residents of that house had made his way inside, caused damage to the property. Red River Valley SWAT was called in to help remove him. He did have some weapons, but they don't know if it was a firearm or just some other devices. So anyway, that is over, and that has ended peacefully, thank goodness. The Fargo Convention Center Committee has heard its last three proposals for a new convention center. The panel heard presentations from Hempel Real Estate, which had two ideas, and Christensen Companies. And so that was on the agenda for today. There are nine proposals in all. The committee will make a final recommendation to the city commission, which could make a final decision sometime next year. It's kind of weird, though, like all the city commissioners are on the panel, so I guess they're going to make a presentation to themselves. There are some people from around the community that will have a voice, too, but it will be the city commission that will end up moving that forward in one direction or another. WDAY Radio reports two people have been arrested in connection with what police are calling a serious assault in Moorhead. Happened about 4 a.m. this morning. Nothing good happens after midnight, my mom always used to say. I'm pretty sure nothing good has ever happened at 4 a.m. Close to a weekend there. A person was taken to the hospital, evaluated for non-life-threatening injuries. A 45-year-old Tyler Cloud of Fargo and a 15-year-old juvenile from Moorhead face felony aggravated robbery and second-degree assault charges. It was a serious assault. What's your 15-year-old doing out at 4 a.m., for gosh sakes? We have all been following the story of Sophia, the 12-year-old girl who was shot at Annunciation Catholic Church. Doctors disclosed today that little Sophia has a bullet that is lodged in her brain. The bullet, according to doctors, injured critical blood vessels. The doctor said today in a press update, "I can't tell you how this is going to end. I don't know what her permanent deficits are going to be, but we're a little more optimistic that she's going to survive," and she's apparently showing signs of a possible recovery. Holy smokes. A bullet lodged in her brain. Yowza. Also in the news today, the Northern Cass Schools has been, the Northern Cass School, I guess it's all together there, in Hunter, has been named a Blue Ribbon School for exemplary academic work of students, teachers, and administrators. Congratulations to them. This award came from the state of North Dakota. One of the DOE federal cutbacks has been they don't do this at the federal level anymore. They do it at the state level. So we got that today. So thought that was interesting today. And a final note here for you. Fashion designer Giorgio Armani has passed away at the age of 91. He died at home surrounded by family, one of the most recognizable names and faces in the global fashion industry. He is credited for the concept of making understated elegance into a multi-billion dollar fashion empire. And those, friends, are some of the stories making headlines here on this Friday afternoon. When we come back on the program, the last proposal has been pitched. And now what happens? Fargo Mayor Tim Mahoney will join us to talk a little bit about the process for selecting a finalist to be the next developer for the upcoming Fargo Convention Center. That's next. Fargo Mayor Tim Mahoney joins us on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. And he just got done with the last one of the proposers, the last presentations for the Fargo Convention Center. The committee met today for the final of the 3 days of reviewing presentations from the developers. And he's been kind enough to give us a few minutes here on the phone today. Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor. How are you?
Great. It was a great day again as well. We had some great presenters and people who have done it across the nation. So it's kind of fun to see some of their designs and what they did and how they tried to do it to match the community. So I was very impressed with the nine people who applied.
Well, I was going to start with just exactly what you're talking about there. I was going to ask, did you get the quality of the submissions that you hoped for? And it sounded like you did. Tell me what you liked about the kind of presentations that you heard.
Well, criteria of what we wanted, how big a space we wanted, and it was also trying to match with how much money we have. So each time somebody would present, they'd have just a little different innovation of how you get the maximum out of it, and then oftentimes how you mix the hotel with it. A Fargo Dome threw us a curveball. They presented a hotel plus an entertainment center, which we had not expected. So that was kind of nice to see that, where you would add not only a hotel, but some restaurants and bars up in the site, because that oftentimes, North Fargo, what do you do prior to the game or what do you do prior to convention? So that was a little twist. Grijalva had a great idea where they wanted to go and what they wanted to do. And then when you'd see some of the renderings, that was really the interesting part of how people see a convention center. And I don't know, you know, you and I may be our old school, but the old time, you know, square building, that's no longer what they try to do. And it's just they add some character and how they can use the floors and how they can mix it up. It was really interesting to me how different people who presented had different ideas of how to make the space work better.
Yeah, you're right. I'm kind of, first of all, old school, and second of all, I'm not the most creative with design and things like that. Mine would look like a basketball gym probably with four flat walls. So I'm glad there's other people that have those gifts that can design things like that, because it is nice, right? I mean, it's got to look nice too, right? It can't just work. It's got to have a good aesthetic appeal.
Yeah, that's true. And then, like, we went down and looked at St. Cloud. And you wouldn't think about it, but you got to have power all over in the building. And they had power coming out of the ceiling. It was kind of awkward, you know, to try to power up the whole floor that way. I'm trying to imagine going to the home show with all the wires coming out of the ceiling to do your power. Much stuff didn't necessarily work the best. And they, St. Cloud, they complained that didn't work the best for them. So it was fun for me to see different design concepts and how you can manage a variety of different people being on the main floor, a variety of different speakers, different elements of you're going to have, you know, 800 people in a room, or you're going to have a couple thousand. Just what are you going to do with that space? And just really interesting, we basically got, you know, to have groups have experts from a national basis come and speak to us.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, where the proposals came from. Does it matter? Let's say you have a local developer. I think I heard you mention a couple of minutes ago, Brujala was kind of behind one of the proposals, but I'm sure you have people coming from the Twin Cities or outside of that. Does it matter to you that, you know, I think we always, most of the time would want to try to hire local people to do local work if we can. But that's not always possible. Does it matter to you, and do you think it matters to the committee, where the developer is from and where the people are from?
Well, for instance, today, a couple of the presenters had gone to NDSU and now are down in the cities, so they kind of know what the community is like. But a lot of the presenters talked about wanting to have it somewhat Fargo theme, try to find some Fargo theme that works. And to me, regardless of where you're at, that's just taking it from the locals and what they would like in it. And you remember Charlie Johnson, we did that North of Normal. That was the craziest thing they did one time, right? But sometimes the town comes up with different ideas of what they think they want to be as what is the character of the community. So I think outside developers can pick up on that, but the expertise they bring is how you would necessarily have people catch what the community needs or wants, and then that it would be viable. A lot of them have the expertise that here's where the shows are going now. And by the way, that's going to change in 5 or 10 years. So you've got to have a building that's flexible enough that you can accommodate the new needs of where people are going. So that was interesting for us to hear because it's not a stable market. It's an ever-evolving market.
As you listen to these presentations, I'm sure you saw things that you said, wow, that's pretty great. I really think that that's something that our community could use. If somebody asked you, Mayor, how will this convention center make our city better, the hometown that I have, the place that I live, what do you say to people when that question comes your way? How will this convention center improve the city of Fargo?
Well, for instance, National League of Cities, you know, is all over the state, and we don't have a place big enough for a venue for the next cities, which baffles me, right? That's an organization that all the communities throughout the state are part of, and it's an honor to have them in our community. And they say, well, you don't have enough exhibit space, or you don't have that. And that's what I think we're missing out, is we're missing out even regional things that go to Bismarck or Grand Forks. Valera Center has a nice engagement area. You just are missing some stuff that regionally would be good, and I think we compete as a community. But it'd be nice to have some of the regional conventions come our direction.
Yeah, the phone line has given us a little trouble here, but it's good enough that I want to keep going because I think this is an important conversation here. Mayor, the process from here, what happens now that you've heard all 9 presentations, and when do you expect to have a decision?
Well, Charlie says the next 2 weeks we'll score them. So what you have to do, there's about 25 factors that you score, 1 through 5. And then the group will score them, and then we'll see who comes up with the highest score. So the reality is you know, that's a first blush of where our favorites or what do we like. And we work real hard on getting criteria. So my guess is that probably 4 or 5 will sort out on the higher end. So that's going to be the fun part of it, to see where they land. And then with those, then you get to have them present, okay, we've been picked, here's what we're going to do. My curiosity is the finances. We really like it not to cost the city ongoing a lot of money. So I'm very excited to see some of them have some innovative ways of managing the profit and loss of the convention center with their hotel. So that's going to be where the rubber hits the road, because you're going to have to figure out how is this all going to work long term.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. Once you get the building built, you've only started to run the building, and then you have to run it year by year. What were some of the other, you talked about the hotel, and that could provide some ongoing revenue that could help put money in the bank for needs or things where money might be short. What were some of the other ideas that you heard from the presenters about a way to make sure that the building is solvent year after year once it does get built?
Well, a lot of the money is in catering and food and liquor. So somehow if you give all the food and liquor profits to the hotel, they do well, you do poorly. So if you have some way to cost share some of that, which you get a percentage of the food and liquor that goes into the event, that helps pay the cost of running the convention center. So we saw a lot of that. We would have some things in which you shared some of the profits. You would do some of the booking or getting people into it. But you really need to have people committed to make it busy and have the things going on there all the time. And that was part of it. One group had a different booking agent than the people that owned the convention center. So it made it difficult at times because maybe they didn't try as hard to get an event because, you know, it didn't pan out as far as profitability. But as one of the guys said, you know, sometimes maybe you break even, but then your hotels in the community do well, your restaurants in your community do well. So it's worth it. And that was a good comment, is that you really want to get some of the stuff in your community, even if you don't make a lot of money on it, just so you get the people in our area spending money.
Do you have to stick to certain criteria, Mayor, when you make this decision? You talked about the process. We're going to score 1 to 5 in 25 different categories. But what if you just really, really like one of the designs and the numbers don't add up? Can you say, look, here's my recommendation. I get it. Maybe others score higher than that. But I just think there's something about this building that maybe can't be quantified by numbers. And this is my pick. Can you do that? Or does it have to be very regimented with the numbers?
Yeah, in some ways, because it's an RFP, basically what has to happen, whatever comes out of the committee can go to the commissioners. And you could have, I mean, Steve, like you make a good point, one of the commissioners to say, no, this is my favorite project, this is what I want. And even though they didn't score well, I think we ought to choose them. But then you'd have to appeal to, you'd have to get two other votes that agreed with them. So it'd be hard not to accept what the rule or what the findings of the committee are. It'll maybe come down to three choices, and the commission will have to decide which one is for the best interest of the city.
In addition to the five commissioners, the four and then yourself that will make this decision upcoming, you have nine people from the community, business people, economic development, chamber, and so forth. Okay, here's my honest question for you, Mayor. You five are going to make the decision. How do the other nine people feel? How do you encourage them to feel like, yeah, your vote really is going to matter too, because at the end of the day, it's the five of us that are really going to make the decision on this?
Well, I think let's say they give three choices and number one and two are very close together in their choice. There may be a financial reason that two is better than one as far as for the city and for long-term risk. So you could see that happening if we were just risk-averse of the number one pick. But I'm going to say, Steve, I think the numbers are going to come out real close, whatever the picks are in the top three, and it'll be a matter of the city looking at what's the least risk. So maybe more what's our risk with this. Maybe we choose number two rather than number one. But the committee's pretty solid. I think it's a great committee. I'll have a hard time not choosing when they choose number one. So we'll see how that works out.
Last question for you here. Was there one or two that just kind of blew everybody away? I'm not going to ask you who it was, but in coming away from these conversations, do you feel like, gosh, we got 5-6 choices, and I don't know how we're going to pick between them, or do you feel like there were one or two that just blew everybody away?
I think there's 4 or 5 choices, because there were some great presentations and great ideas. And part of it is we couldn't get into, like Ruhala, I asked him, so tell me about the finances, and they didn't quite reveal everything about that. So that's where a lot of it's going to come down to is let's look at what the money works. $40 million nowadays buying a building, you know and I know, that doesn't go very far.
Yeah.
So you have to be somewhat innovative of how you figure that out, and then land costs are thrown there as well. We had a couple of them talk about, well, you could lease the land from us or we could do something else. So those are the real things that will come up. But I think we have really like 4 to 5 solid performers that will be in the final list to pick out who the winner is.
Okay, and that final list, it'll be you're going to narrow it down to 3 or 4? What's that number?
But Charlie has talked either 5 or 3. He's not really put a number on that. He's kind of, okay, let's do our scoring, and let's say 4 or 5 come out very close. I'd assume those would go further. Let's say you do your scoring and only 3 come up really with high numbers, then I would think those 3 would go. And that's kind of when you have a committee that big, typically what happens. You start separating people out by the numbers. And there's some criteria things, Steve, that some won't qualify for. Some aren't in blighted areas, so they'll score a 0 there.
Okay.
So you know, some of them won't be able to score in certain areas. So it'll be curious to me if when everybody puts their scores in, how they score.
Got it. So somewhere between 3 and 5 advance to sort of the next round then is what you're saying.
Yes.
Yep, very good. Mayor, thank you for taking the time. I just called you a short time ago, and you got back to me right away, and I do appreciate that very much. It's great to have this perspective kind of right after things finished up today, so we do appreciate you taking the time. Have a good weekend.
You too. Thanks, Steve.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Mayor Tim Mahoney joining us here on the Steve Halsham Show. All right, what did you hear? What do you like? What further questions do you have? Just kind of wondering your thoughts on the process. I got a couple observations that I'll point out as we continue here on the Steve Halsham Show. First, though, we got to get to the news office and the weather center as well. Those folks have been working hard all day. So news and weather, and back with more talking about the Fargo Convention Center discussion when we come back on the Steve Alstrom Show. Friday afternoon here on the Steve Alstrom Show as we wind down the week. Dr. Matt Eaton at Dakota Implant and Sedation Center has dedicated his professional life to transforming smiles and restoring confidence one patient at a time. And when you meet him, you'll feel it. It's not just a job, it's a calling. At Dakota Implant and Sedation Center in Fargo, Dr. Eaton helps everybody, young, seasoned, and everywhere in between. So whether you need a single tooth or a full mouth restoration, he's here to help with skill, compassion, and experience. Whether you've been hiding your smile for years or you're ready for a fresh start, trust his skill, compassion, and experience. Visit DakotaDentalImplant.com today, DakotaDentalImplant.com. All right, here were my takeaways from my conversation with the mayor, and would love to hear your comments on what you heard. Did you leave the interview wanting more information about anything in particular? Did you get all the answers that you were looking for? Let me know what you're thinking about that. 701-271-1100. You can email studio at flagfamily.com or shoot us a note on the text line, 701-237-1590. The big takeaways for me is, number one, they're done. They heard all nine presentations. He said overall thought it was really good quality. And he said one of the submissions from the Fargo Dome brought sort of a creative twist where there would be some retail and maybe even some residential. I don't know if he said residential, but some retail, you know, kind of the shop condo. No, not shop. That's not the right word. Where you've got a lot of things going on, but you got some retail within the facility there. So it sounded like that was kind of a unique factor there. I assume it was, you know, in bounds to do that, and that it didn't break any rules for doing that, or it would have been thrown out. So good on them, right, up at the Fargo Dome for trying something a little bit different. So that will be interesting to see how that factors in. My guess is just kind of knowing how the city and the dome are so closely linked together. I guess I just, maybe it's the old man cynic in me. I'd just be shocked if the Fargo Dome is not one of the final selections, you know, the next four finalists or whatever they come up with. Maybe that's just me. But I thought that was an interesting note from the mayor. Said overall, really liked what we saw. A lot of good ideas. And he said they're not just, you know, block-looking brick buildings, which is good. He said some of the presentations came from local developers, and then there were some that came from people that had local ties. He said some of the architects and designers went to school at NDSU. They live in Minneapolis now. And he didn't, I asked him, will it matter? Like, do you really want to pick a local company? He didn't say yes to that. So I think, based on what I heard from him, at least in his mind, just want the best design. What works the best doesn't really have to be someone local at all. He said they're going to pick somewhere 3, 4, 5 finalists to kind of advance to the next round. And before he mentioned those numbers, he said 4 or 5 that made a good impression. So that was those were some of the big takeaways from the chat there. In my mind, one of the most important criteria, and it sounds like they have 25 different criteria. What do you say? Pieces of criteria? Items? Lists of criteria? Anyway, 25 different things that matter, and they're going to rank them 1 to 5. To me, it has to be a very, 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 very important part of this to score the building based on how it continues to function day after day once it gets built. It is so easy with projects like this to think all about the finish line being when you have the ribbon cutting and you have your first, you know, people walking in the front door. That's not the finish line here. The finish line has to be, you know, pick a day, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years down the road. And will this building have been designed in such a way that it doesn't lose money? These things are above my pay grade. I don't know how you design buildings to do that, but so many of these public facilities, convention centers, whatever, they lose money, because one reason or another, you know, inflation goes up and these buildings are not always designed as commercial centers where we generate revenue. So I think when you take a look at that, when you're talking about, I think he mentioned one of the designs had some restaurant in there, and maybe a different one had some retail, but those were things where there could be money that gets spun off from what happens in the convention center when you're not having conventions. And to me, I think that's really important. If Tony Gehrig was sitting here right next to me, he would say, Steve, you're being foolish. They're all going to lose money. Yeah, maybe so. I don't know. But I want the one that loses less. So this has to be a good thing 5, 10, 15 years from now, because it's going to be great. There'll be a lot of excitement, whatever. But the job of the city commissioners is not to have something that makes us all excited, feel good, warm fuzzies and goosebumps on day one. It's to put something together that serves this community well for years and years to come. So I don't know if that's one of the 25 things or if that's a separate consideration, but boy, that's got to be a huge part of this, is how do we find a project that kicks off some revenue so it's not just your convention center money, the power, the employees, the taxes, and all those things. Those things never stop. It is a nonstop cash register, and it keeps on ringing. So how are you going to make this a building that does have some way to generate revenue? And I think that's an important, really, 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 really important part of this whole thing. And it has to be one of the main criteria for the selection. So we'll see what happens. The mayor didn't give a specific time, but he said the job now is to basically score it all and then get our, whatever, 3, 4, 5 finalists. And then there would be a second round of presentations there. Which I think it's good. I mean, you have to have a very diligent process, and you've got to be very detail oriented. And sometimes you don't think of the right questions or the best questions right away, but you hear from the person again, and you can ask your follow up questions. So I appreciated the mayor's time today, and it's one of those pieces of the community that I am one of those people that believes that these things are needed in the community. You have to have a quality of life that it helps people come here for business, school, all those things. But we are also operating at a time when our budgets and our tax money are stretched so that we don't have any more to give. And so these things have to make sense financially within the city as well. And I'm sure there is data, there are studies out there. Charlie Johnson, I'm sure, has been working on this. He's on the committee. Former Convention Visitors Bureau, but a guy who knows this game very well, to figure out as we put the building together and as we get these plans for how it all happens here, how are we going to make this something that is good for the entire community? And the mayor talked about, you know, restaurants around there, hotels around there, they will all do more business here. Shields will have more people coming to town to shop, which is great. We like Shields. We like the restaurants, we like the hotels, but how do we make this building work well for that guy and that gal who are in their early 30s and they got 3 little kids and they're trying to get by on jobs where maybe they don't make a ton? How is this going to be good for them? Because we don't want more cost of the city. We want more things that generate revenue for the city so that we as taxpayers don't have to pay as much. So that's going to be, I think, an important part of this process, is to map all of that out and make sure that it really is good for the community in the long run, for everybody in the community, not just a handful of businesses that might do better based on this. And that's, again, kind of goes back to why we need to make sure that the building itself makes sense. So it's a fun project to think about. I do like these things. They have to make sense, but our tax money is needed for certain things to improve the community, and that is a very, very slippery slope, and we have to make sure that our spending decisions as a city reflect that. But you do need these things. Some of us older, crustier people who's, you know, we're not getting big raises anymore in life, and maybe we're on fixed income. We care less and less about fancy and pretty and fun. We just want to be able to afford our grocery bill each month. So we've got to be thinking about those things as well. But these are things that growing and healthy communities do. and give reasons for people to come to this community, to stay in this community, to come to go to school here, and make homes and careers here. So I enjoy this process. I have a lot of questions about how this all gets paid for and what it looks like, but I do enjoy seeing these things start to happen. I come from a performing arts family as well. My kids were both in performing arts. I would love to see Fargo have a performing arts center someday. Now, I don't know if that's something that should be publicly funded or if it's privately funded, but these things do create quality of life for people that aren't like you and me. And just because we might not like it, we might not use it, I think we have to speak up for ourselves for sure, but we have to understand it's more than just about us as well. And we do have to be civic-minded about what's happening in the community. Now, again, if your city commission is making good decisions on spending, that becomes a lot easier to say, yeah, you know what, this makes sense to me. This would be a good thing for the community. It's 4:50 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. When we come back, we can continue that conversation if you would like to. But I do want to talk about some testimony is not the right word, but comments today from a mom whose pain cannot be dismissed. One of the mothers of one of the victims at that Annunciation shooting had a very strong statement to make today about semi-automatic rifles. And I just think this is worth us hearing what was said today. And we'll do that when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Her name is Malia Kimbrell, and today she called for a ban on semi-automatic rifles. And there is no chance that I will be critical of her today on this program. Any other person who might say something like that, I might say, look, lady, I'm sorry, but not this woman, not today. She is the mother of a 9-year-old girl who was critically injured in the Annunciation Catholic Church shooting. So you're going to have to hear me out on this because you're going, Hallstrom, what the heck? Okay, hear me out on this one. Her daughter was shot twice in the back, once in the arm. She has since been discharged, though bullet fragments will remain in her back. Kimbrell, the mom of this little girl, said, came right out and said, we need a ban on semi-automatic rifles and magazines. And she said, it's our only hope. She said, I get it. Mental health needs to be talked about, but I will settle for nothing less than an immediate ban on semi-automatic rifles and high-capacity magazines. And she said, quote, and I will get the names of any lawmakers who stand in the way of that happening, and I will invite you to come to my living room and insist that you hold Vivian's hand while we do her dressing changes each night, and she cries the whole time, and you can look her in the eye while you cleanse her bullet wounds, and you can tell her to her face why you were opposed to keeping her safe, why a semi-automatic rifle is more valuable than her life. Whew. So, Malia will now be the favorite of every MSNBC, CNN, every left-leaning news organization that wants you to hear those words. And I can have a different opinion of Malia, but I'm not going to mock a mother's pain. Not like this. And I did a lot of this kind of discussion yesterday, day before, where I talked about, I get it. People want to do something. When things are dark, people say, we've got to do something, anything. We just have to try something. And I always say, absolutely. What do you suggest? And I would just quietly in my own mind and in my own heart think to myself, I'm sorry, Malia. The answer you're looking for is not going to fix the problem, but I'm not going to tell her that. I'm not going to tell a mom who's going through what she's going through. She has a right to be angry, and she has a right to want to call for any change possible, because her perspective and her shoes that she walks in are different than mine. I think two things can be true at the same time. All right, that'll do it for hour number one of the show. Coming up in hour number two of the program, got a lot of ground yet to cover. Top 5 at 5 is on the way. Back to school season, but not necessarily back to your own school season. That's next. Here we go with hour number two, the Steve Hallstrom Show on this Friday afternoon. Coming to you live from our beautiful studios in South Fargo, brought to you this hour by Roe and Joe Junk Haul and Removal. When it's got to go, call Roe and Joe. they'll get that junk out of there, whether it's commercial or residential. Maybe you got some demolition to take care of. They can do some of that too. John Minton is a 30-year combat vet, and now he's in the business of taking care of other sort of missions, getting that junk out of your shed, out of your garage, out of your house, out of your life, whatever it is that needs to get cleaned up and moved out. John and his team will get the job done. When it's got to go, call Rowan Joe. Rowan Joe Junk Haul and Removal, online at rowanjojunk.com. That's rowenjojunk.com. rowenjojunk.com. All right. It is time for the top five at five. And these are what I believe to be the five most consequential stories in the news cycle today. These are stories that sort of transcend your regular news cycle into stories that are going to affect everyday life or have some meaning a little bigger than maybe what the headlines would suggest. I've been doing this segment pretty much ever since I started the show, and probably every time I go someplace and either do a speaking engagement or see some people around town that start talking about the show, almost always the top five at five comes up, which is great. It's certainly not the only stuff you got to know, but it is stuff you got to know about stuff you got to know stuff about. So I guess we could look at it that way too. So these are the stories that made the cut for me today. And I will also admit to you that I try to stack these in order where I go kind of one, two, three, four, and five as far as having significance to us here. So this is kind of how we're going to do it today. Story number one comes to us from WDAY-TV, and they are writing a story about these Horus families that have been socked with exorbitant special assessment bills. And you might remember that we brought you the story of one young lady, and we told you that her special assessment was leveled against her like six figures. It was over $100,000. And at the time, I was asking the question, like, can that be real? Can somebody get a special assessment that high? And we found out that that absolutely was the case. Well, a lawsuit challenging the assessments against a handful of these Horus families has been dismissed. That means that there's really no option. They've got to find ways to pay these special assessment bills, and there's not really a whole lot of avenues to do it. I mean, you have to just find a way to do it. An attorney who represents the homeowners, though, says the battle is not over. His name is Brandon Erickson, and he says the decision is a setback, but it's a starting point for bigger reforms to the special assessment process. And, you know, sometimes it takes something like this to get our attention. And you know how this lawsuit got dismissed? How is this for a kick in the shorts? The judge dismissed the lawsuit because the homeowners did not appeal within 30 days. Seriously? I get rules are rules, but you don't even, like, when you get this in your mailbox, you don't even, you're not even thinking about, like, okay, I got 30 days to appeal. You're just like, oh my word, and your world is upside down. Like, how am I going to do this? You don't even probably think, okay, I'm going to get a lawyer. I'm going to sue about this. Well, it ended up happening, but they didn't file their official appeal within 30 days, and so the lawsuit is out the door. Man. Okay, I get that we have to have rules for things, and I'm the first one that's going to say, if you just start ignoring rules, then you start ignoring rules, but man, this one's a hard one to swallow. The lawyer, Erickson, says, we can't just bury our head in the sand and say, well, we'll just take it because it's how we've done it for 100 years. And he's right about that. There are more than a dozen Horus homeowners, and some of them have had assessment bills topping six figures. And the group is, by the way, considering an appeal to the North Dakota State Supreme Court. And the other interesting point that was made in this story is that Erickson says we're starting to realize that this special assessment process, back when we started doing this, you know, decades ago, we were not expecting that we're going to be assessing hundreds of thousands of dollars here. And when you've got an interest rate on these special assessments, right? I mean, if you don't pay it right away, you get interest tacked onto it. But he said, look, this isn't what this was supposed to be. Like, nobody believed back when we started doing this that we're going to have $100,000 at 6-7% money. You know, this was, you know, a few bucks here and there, but now the money and the numbers have gotten so massive. And Erickson says the money is just atrocious and something's got to change. And you know what? He's right. I don't know how, this is kind of like the discussion that I have on property taxes and Measure 4. And the problem is not any of the things that we typically say the problem is, for the most part. Okay, I get that there are some ways that the special assessment process in Fargo is not efficient. It there's more problems within the process. It kind of costs us money based on how we do it. But the problem isn't really the tax man, the assessment, the county, anything like that. It's the cost of everything. And you hear me talking about this a lot on the show, that we really need to stop talking about inflation and declaring victory when inflation is at 2%. We need to just have a bigger conversation about how much more it costs to live and what's happened over the last 5 years. We're at, according to government numbers, 25% higher in the cost of things than they were 5 years ago, which means the real number is probably 40 to 50. In reality, because not everything that costs you more that's going up like a rocket is factored into those inflation numbers. So the conversation needs to be had. We've danced around it for a while, but what people can't figure out is how to get government to stop spending money. And until we do that, someone's going to have to pay this bill. And whether you do it by a special or a sales tax or, you know, a bunch of bake sales, I don't know what you're going to do, but we've got to get the spending under control, and this starts with school boards and city councils, to be honest with you, which is why I rail about these things when I see Fargo comes to us with an 11% increase in their spending year over year. That's the problem. This stuff is just 3-4 layers down the cake as we're trying to figure out how to actually take care of the problem. So I don't know who's going to sue or who's going to get sued on this thing, if it's a city thing or whatever. Again, I don't know that the city's fault either, although we want to be mad at the city because it's just the easy thing to do. But I hope that this somehow builds enough steam that it does get taken up at some really high levels. You know, would love to hear Kelly Armstrong's comments on that. When we get him on next, I'll ask him about this. You know, what's your message to these people? All right, well, that was really long, but that's number one. Story number two comes from CNBC today. The payroll numbers, the non-farm payroll numbers that came in here, this is the Bureau of Labor Statistics report. So this is the second jobs report in as many days. As you know, the ADP report was bad. It just was yesterday. I think it was 50,000 jobs created. They were expecting 75,000. Very, very, very weak job numbers there. Well, it didn't get any better today. Non-farm payrolls, according to the BLS, increased by just 22,000 for the month, lower than the 75,000 forecast, while the unemployment rate rose to 4.3%. So in July, these numbers were a little slower, but they hadn't fallen off the cliff. I think now we can pretty much say with certainty we've fallen off the cliff on these numbers. What led and what shed and all that? Health care added 31,000 jobs. Social assistance contributed 16,000. Wholesale trade manufacturing both saw declines of 12,000 on the month. So we're definitely in a slowdown, no doubt about it. And you're seeing different people on Wall Street now really saying the time is now for not just a quarter point rate cut, but half, three quarters, a full point. And these two reports back to back, I'm telling you, friends, these are going to leave a mark. And the Federal Reserve really has to cut now. If there was any drama, it's gone. Now the drama is, are we going to get a quarter or a half or maybe something even more? Markets kind of shrugged it off, which I thought was interesting, but I think it speaks to the fact the stock market believes that we're going to have interest rate cuts. And I think what I just said before about the case is stronger and we might get more probably led traders to hold tight instead of selling today, because there are people on the Fed board now that are calling for a percent percent and a half. So we'll see what happens. So what do we make of this if you're a Trump supporter? Okay. And I'm one of them. I am. I'm in favor of what President Trump is doing with the economy and with these the Doge cuts and all of those kinds of things. Here's what I would tell you. It looks bad. It does. And the Trump administration is going to spin this is not the right word, but they're going to try to tell you that it's not as bad as it is. These numbers are brutal. They just are. There's no other way to explain that. Now, is it his fault? Okay, let's take the politics completely out of it, and let's not cheer for one side or the other. If I look at this from as agnostic a perspective as I possibly can, I would say Donald Trump did this basically believing that somehow, some way, with the tariffs and the trade stuff that he put together, which, by the way, is way better than you're being told it is, but we know that there are impacts that have happened from that. We know that there's been a lower number of people coming down from Canada and buying their things. We know that there has been some inflation tick up. Not a lot, but a little bit. But the president, I believe, felt that he could somehow, some way, and he's working on this, find a way to get the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates, which would create enough optimism within the economy that it would sort of be able to fight off what he was doing. When you do the Doge cuts, that's another thing. You're cutting massive numbers of government employees. And while in the long run, that's good, in the short run, those are jobs. And those people spend money when they have jobs and they don't spend as much when they don't. So you have all of these things that have happened on purpose to get ourselves to a better place later on. I believe it's the right choice to make, but it's the long game. So I believe that Donald Trump thought by now the data would prompt the Federal Reserve to make some kind of a change, and it has not. Now, it might be that Powell is completely being a political animal on this, which seems to me like about the only explanation that I can give you, although he's now talking about cuts, so maybe it's not as bad as we think. But I would also say if we would have gotten the right interest rate maneuvers earlier in the game, and if we would have got better data about jobs numbers and things like that along the way, this picture that we're seeing now would have been more clear to us several weeks and months ago. So it's honestly, to me, it's a little surprising that we've seen highs in the market, GDP being as strong as it's been, because we have cut jobs. And we've got this high cost of living right now. And again, this is a natural cleansing, sort of a purging of some of the waste within our economy. But these things are good news if you want things done fundamentally right. But there's some difficulty. And the president said right away, he said, look, we might have a little bit of a tough stretch. So here's the thing. If you're like me, and you've been saying to people all along, look, these are the right decisions. They might just hurt for a little bit. You got to sit and take it. And when you get the social media demons that come out like, oh, how great is your president now? Look at what he did. You know what? I can't say anything. Because I can say we're doing the right things. It's going to take a while. Federal Reserve has got to do its job. I can say all that, but that falls on deaf ears and people don't want to hear it. Because right now, the numbers are what they are. And this is a tough labor market. It is. And there's no way to sugarcoat that. So we need the Federal Reserve to get involved. They're starting to talk like they're going to play ball, and they need to get to it. So that's my little spiel on that. I am attempting, apparently, to set a record for the longest top 5 at 5 in history today. I've got a few things to say. What can I tell you about this? All right. Number three, we're still talking about your... Mace, am I all right? I thought I heard some music in my ear there. Okay, we're good. All right, I thought Macy was saying, Steve, I'm tired of listening to you just drone on and on. But okay. All right, Macy's filling in for Addison today and doing a wonderful job. But she's not used to segments going 68 minutes. So she's like, wait, he's got to be ready for break sooner or later. I promise, Macy, we'll get to a break here pretty soon. Story number three, mortgage rates see their biggest one-day drop in over a year. Average rate on the 30-year fixed rate mortgage dropped 16 basis points, is how they say it. So 0.16 to 6.29 today. In May, we were almost a percent higher, 7.08%. Because of that, you had some home builder stocks, Lennar, D.R. Horton, Pulte, all gained ground today. So your favorite mortgage banker may not have that four-day weekend much longer if these rates continue to go down there. It's been a little slow for the mortgage people, but things are starting to pick up there a little bit. Story number four, I have to put this one in there because I think we're all pulling for this young lady. 12-year-old Sophia Forcas remains in critical condition 10 days after being shot in the head during the mass shooting at Annunciation School in Minneapolis. The 12-year-old girl has kind of become sort of the rooting interest we all have for the victims down there. And they've already removed one side of her skull. We told you that a couple days ago. They may have to remove the other side. They don't know what that would do to her long term, but they're just trying to get her to survive. But doctors said today that she's in a medically induced coma because a bullet remains lodged in her brain, and we had not heard that before. The bullet's path injured critical blood vessels. The doctor said, I can't tell you how this is going to end. I don't know what her permanent deficits are going to be, but we're a little more optimistic that she's going to survive. Holy smokes. I cannot imagine going through all of that as a family. It's just a it's just a horrendous story, and we just keep hoping that there will be some better news that that comes out of this whole thing. But I don't know. It's one that words kind of fail me. And finally, the Labor Department's August jobs report that was published earlier this week showed that the number of immigrant workers in our country declined over the last year, while job growth among U.S.-born workers accelerated. August data showed over the last year the number of employed foreign-born workers, a metric that doesn't factor out legal versus illegal, has declined by 822,000 since last August. In that period, the number of employed U.S.-born workers has increased by 2.76 million. So there you go. Even though we've had some tough job news, I think the opportunities for native-born workers, black, brown, white, yellow, whatever your skin color is, are going up now. And again, this is one of those things that in the long run, we're going to have something to show for this. But in the short run, there can be a few pain points on those things. It's 524. We got to hit a break here. And when we come back, got a couple folks who want to visit with us and add their comments to the program. We're happy to have that. 701-271-1100, 271-1100. So we got that to go. Plus, before we finish up today, it's back to school season, but not necessarily back to your own school season. We'll talk about open enrollment numbers in Minnesota. Open enrollment's used a lot more than I thought. Maybe it'll be a surprise to you as well. That when we come back. That's right. We're keeping it thumping here on a Friday afternoon on the Steve Alstrom Show. All right. From the text line, Steve, if the convention center goes anywhere but downtown, we as a city have wasted a lot of tax dollars with incentives given to build down there. Personally, I don't trust the commission to make this decision. Well, that's an interesting point. So if it goes anywhere but downtown, that means we as a city have wasted a lot of tax dollars with incentives given to build down there. So this person is saying it's got to be a downtown area thing. I see where you're going on that. You could probably find some debate on the other side of that one, too, but thanks for that comment there. Let's go to the phone line. Dana's been waiting the longest here. Dana, good afternoon. Welcome to the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. What's on your mind? Dana, you there?
Yeah, you there, Steve?
Yes, there you go. Sure am.
I had it on mute. Anyway, I was going to say, and I'm just being honest about this, until our leaders, like your commissions, your legislature, our Senate, senators, congressmen, all the way to the top, Trump, and I'm a Trump backer, until they face the fact that this system that we're operating under is a self-destruct, self-feeding, faster and faster go backwards thing. And they have to change the policies on how they bring money from the Federal Reserve into this system. Until they face that fact, the only thing we're guaranteed is higher and higher prices, more and more people not being able to afford their homes, more and more people getting unemployed. And then we have autonomous farming and robots coming into the scene, which is going to make our unemployment even greater. And I just got to say to them, I've got an idea how to change this. Why are you guys so against change? Is it because it's not your idea, so you figure it's worthless? Or is it that the people just don't mean anything and the money is more important to you than leading our country in a positive, go-forward way?
Dana, you put a lot of thought into that, and I can tell. I love where you're at on this one. The Federal Reserve and the U.S. government, it's more the federal government than it is the Federal Reserve in my mind, but how many trillions of dollars were pumped into this economy during COVID? Those two major tranches that went through there. When there's that much money in the system, prices are going to be high, and we have not seen prices obviously return back to pre-COVID levels, and I don't know that we ever will. It takes years, maybe even decades, for that excess, quote-unquote excess money to work its way through the system. That's why we had the inflation we had, and that's why it cost 25% more to buy just about anything than it did 5 years ago. Dana, thanks for the comment. Good stuff there. I appreciate it. Yeah, I got to run, but just because we're up against it. Real quick, Dana. Oh, okay. Well, I was going to try to give him another 30 seconds there, but I do want to get Crystal in, and then we've got a news and weather check as well. Crystal is on the line as well. Hey, Crystal, what's going on with you?
I am so pumped today because of the technology dinner that was going on yesterday with Google and all these other tech CEOs pumping in billions of dollars. And a lot of people who do not understand the fact that next year, 2026, is when we are going to be looking at what is our life like now, 2026, compared to 2 years ago. And so if there's a job increase, as it probably will be, because there's billions from Google and Apple and all these other places, I mean, it is going to be phenomenal. So you got the Democrats whining and crying about what it is today. That's not the point. The point is November 2026. Is your life better? Has your life increased to be a better place right now financially? Living a better life today and a year from now? And the Democrats are totally screwed up about the crime and the job increase. I am so totally screwed up about these Democrats. They do not understand that next year, if you want to call it a referendum on Trump, great. But next year, November 2026, is when we're going to say is my life better now under the Trump administration compared to Democrats?
Yep, that's right.
That's the whole issue.
Yeah, Crystal, thanks for calling. Good point. Yeah, there's about 16 things I'd like to say after that. But in the interest of time, I'll keep it super quick. Yes, a year from now, people are going to say, do I want more of this? And it's not that simple because, of course, Donald Trump isn't on the ballot. It's senators and congressmen and women and people like that. So you got to like those candidates. It's not just a referendum on Trump, although that's something to do with it. But you've got to take a look at, is my life better? Is crime better? Have these economic maneuvers that Trump pulled, have they worked yet? That's why he did them all right away, because he knew it was going to take time for this to start to show results where he could go in front of the American people and say, hey, give us 2 more years of full majority in House and Senate. And the presidency to get this done. So, yes, I agree with you. It's going to be a referendum on everything. They're going to latch onto these gun things like Minneapolis, and they're going to try to get Trump that way because they can't compete with him on crime and real life issues. But for a lot of people, real life issue is gun crime, and we get that. So there's a lot behind what you said there, but I think you make a good point. A year from now, we're going to have, I think, a lot more complete record on what the first half of the administration looks like, and we'll see where we're at then. All right, 5:35, we got a news and weather check. When we come back, how many students have open enrolled in Moorhead to go somewhere else, and what has the trend been with enrollment here in our area and in the state of Minnesota as a whole? Do those numbers show the same? Some surprising numbers, I think. We'll have those when we come back. The Star Tribune has put together a very good article about open enrollment that I had a chance to read through, and I thought I'd share a little bit of that with you because it really seemed to be an eye-opener for me on how many people open enroll and go to other schools. And I don't typically see a lot of data about this, but Star Tribune got a hold of the data from every school district around the state of Minnesota. And the reasons that people do open enrollment are obviously different things. Sometimes you have some relationships with people in a district nearby, but it's not your hometown. You might want to be part of a sports team at that area. If you're in the Twin Cities, it's like you're going to drive, 20 minutes and you go to any of 20 different schools. So there's a lot of different approaches and different reasons people do it. But the numbers have definitely been significant over the years. The article says 17% of the state's nearly 870,000 students enrolled outside their resident district last year. This is from the Minnesota Department of Education. That means one in five Minnesota students is going to school at a place other than where they were supposed to go, basically. The reason it matters is that school funding is tied to all of these enrollment numbers, and each student accounts for about $10,000, right? So it's sort of a business. And they're not like trying to make money, right? But you want to have new equipment. You want to have new facilities. You want to be able to replace stuff when it's not right. You want to have a new football jersey every few years for the football team and things like that. So there is a competitive environment. And when people talk about, the voucher program and, school choice and things like that, I do think it's worth making at least a small part of the conversation the note about, well, there is competition already. And if you run a terrible school and people have the opportunity to move, they might very well do that. Now, if you live up on the Iron Range, you don't have that same luxury to be able to pick which one of the 50 schools within a reasonable drive you want to go to. So schools are doing a lot more surveying of the families in their district, trying to market themselves in a certain way and trying to get people to be proud of where they go to school and maybe get some people to come if they're not too far away there. Fridley Public Schools has an international baccalaureate curriculum, kind of advanced education program of some kind or another. It brings in more than $8 million to the district each year. Holy smokes. So this was something that happened in the late 1980s after I graduated from high school in 1986 in the great town of Mora, Minnesota. And we didn't really have this, not that we would have wanted to. I mean, we were proud to be Mora Mustangs and wouldn't have wanted to go anywhere else. We hated those turkeys over in Pine City and Ogilvie. We didn't want to go there. In Minnetonka, 40% of the district's 11,000 students last year lived outside of their borders. I guess Minnetonka, right? Yeah, well, I go to school with Minnetonka. They've got all these academic programs, the science, the math stuff, language immersion. So it's a big deal. So they also have in this article, they have an interesting sort of, find my school. Sort of a drop down on this, and you can take a look to see what are things like for your school. And I took a look at my old high school, Mora, and it was pretty level over the last 20 years. Not really percentage wise. Not many more students left than open enrolled. It was just pretty much very level across the board there. Morehead the same way, and I was curious about that since it's right in our backyard. And right now, there are about 8% of the students who live in the Morehead public school district who choose to go to school in a different district, including a charter district. So this could be Park Christian, could be Capstone, could be Shanley. So, you know, private school has something to do with that too. And then as far as the percentage of students coming in to Moorhead who live in another district, the number over the last 7 years or so has been pretty flat. It was about 1.8% of the students in 2018, and now it's about 2.1. So a little bit of an increase there. So I thought that was interesting. If you are curious about taking a look at how your favorite Minnesota public school district is doing, pretty easy to find this story. Just you know, Google search open enrollment Star Tribune, and you'll be able to find it there. It talked about one Minneapolis parent by the name of Maria Perry, and they live in Minneapolis, but she open enrolls her five kids in Roseville schools. And she says having this choice is fantastic to, she was not saying it this way, but I will, to get her kids out of, you know, inner city Minneapolis school. She said, all my kids had different personalities, so it was about finding the right school that could draw out their success. Having options that are safe without feeling closed in gave us hope and a voice in that success. So I thought that was an interesting comment there. All right, 5:46 here. Let's go back to the phone lines. And we've got Dana. I don't know if this is the same Dana or we got another Dana. But we welcome the caller, Dana, to the program. Hello, sir or ma'am.
It's the same Dana.
Okay, Dana. You had one more thing you wanted to say.
Yeah, you brought up how they did the PPP payments. Now it didn't work. Just put us in debt. That's because they didn't put it in with any greed control on it. And they didn't have issues in there where they had rules where it helps everybody instead of just one person. I just want to get my idea out, Steve, so that people can think about it, hear it, throw it around. Otherwise, you know, they're set to go broke again here. They're going to print some more money in the next, what, month or so?
Yes.
Shut down?
Yes.
It'll just be the same thing over and over and over, Steve. We got to do something different.
Okay, so what's your idea? You said you had an idea.
I'd have to come on your show, and you got to give me the time to lay it out so it's not just 5 minutes and then everybody judges it on one or two things.
Oh, okay. So yeah, it's gotcha, Dana. Here's the best way to do it, and I'm curious about your thoughts on it. Honestly, it's hard for me to give like 10, 15, 20 minutes to a subject like that. If you want to send me an email, I'd be happy to take a look at it and review it on the program. But thank you, Dana, for giving a call. And I'm glad you're thinking about
thank
these things
again.
Because we need to definitely come up with different ideas on this.
Trump's in there, and he can get it done. I know he can.
Well,
in charge of those governors that run the Federal Reserve. He can get it done.
Yeah, he's not in. Well, yes and no. I mean, he can pull some strings there, but the Federal Reserve right now operates independently. He can appoint certain people, and he can, you know, make certain things happen. I guess he can fire Powell for doing that. So I guess you're right. There's precedent for doing that. He's been very reluctant to do that. So, Dana, thanks for giving a call.
Too. Yep. Thank you.
Okay.
Steve.
Appreciate you, Dana. Have a good weekend, my friend. Thanks for giving a call in. Okay. I want to say some of the PPP, though. The PPP was, Dana's right about it. It was misused. People that never should have got it. But I'm telling you what, there would be another 100 businesses, small businesses in Fargo, Moorhead, West Fargo, at least, that would not be here today if it were not for the PPP program. Because basically the government, they had to do it because they were the ones saying, stay home, don't go out, don't go shopping, you can't go to the restaurant, don't go to work, and all that. And they scared the life out of people. And so they did that paycheck protection program. If you kept your employees on through COVID, then they would help you do that so you at least have people going. Now, we can have our own long conversation about was it the right thing to do? Was it government getting involved? But government applied the pressure to private industry. So in my mind, they had to do something. Now, it should have been done differently, 100%. But it's hard for me to say that PPP program was a waste or not a good program. It just wasn't administered as carefully as it should have been, no question. All right, 550, Steve Holcim Show. When we come back, a couple of final thoughts. We got to talk a little bit about the big Bison game coming up tomorrow. The boys have a very interesting venue to play in coming up this weekend. We'll talk about it next. The top-ranked Bison football team is on the road this week. And NDSU, for the second straight week, will have to hop on a plane. Actually, they've probably done it already because they play tomorrow in Nashville, Tennessee. They're taking on Tennessee State, who is playing its home games at Nissan Stadium. That's where the Tennessee Titans play. They are a Nashville-based school, and they're doing some renovation to their stadium, so they're playing their home games over there where the big boys play. So pretty fun stuff for NDSU to get that opportunity. Tennessee State is this could be a fun game. I would still expect the Bison to win this one by touchdown or two, but Tennessee State was 9-4 last year, made the NCAA playoffs, lost at Montana by a couple of touchdowns, and Montana had a good team last year, so they're 1-0 this year. They won their home opener last week at home to North Carolina A&T, 24-21. So would expect NDSU to win it, but it could be fun. And what a great setting that'll be. All right, that'll do it for the program today. Have a great night, great weekend, my friend, and keep on flying that flag.